Good evening, everybody. Pretty close to evening, anyway. I'd like to call the Legislative and Budget and Audit Committee to order. Today is Tuesday, January 24th, 2023. The time is 5 p.m. Please silence your cell phones. And this is Senator Stedman, serving as the honorary chair until the chair is elected. We have the following members present. We have Representative Carpenter, Senator Wilikowski, Senator Josephson, Representative Josephson, Representative Vance, Senator Kawasaki, Representative Tomaszewski, Senator Bishop. So we have a quorum to do business today. I will now open the nominations for chair of the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee. Representative Vance, do you have an opinion?
I nominate Representative Carpenter as chair of the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee for the 33rd Alaska State Legislature, and I move that nominations be closed.
Without objection, Representative Carpenter is elected chair of the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee. We'll have a brief at ease. I will now pass the gavel on to our new chairman, Representative Carpenter.
Thank you, Senator Stedman. I will now open nominations for vice chair of the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee, Representative Tomaszewski.
I nominate Senator Stedman as Vice Chair of Legislative Budget and Audit Committee for the 33rd Alaska State Legislature, and I move that nominations be closed.
Without objection, Senator Stedman is elected Vice Chair of the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee. Today's meeting will be an overview of the committee's functions and processes. I'm in the process of hiring a committee aide for the committee, and for the time being, Vice Chairman Stedman's staff, Rose Foley, will be assisting with a committee aide duties while we hire someone. Sophia Tenney will be the recording secretary for Legislative Budget and Audit Committee meetings. Please be sure to speak loudly into your microphone so she can capture what we say. Talia Ames is operating the teleconference for us today. Legislative Budget and Audit is a committee that is governed by statute, not by uniform rules. Therefore, some of the procedures will be different from normal or other committees that we're used to. The statutes and other information are contained in the committee handbook, which has been distributed in hard copy and is available on the committee's website at lba.akleg.gov. I would like to highlight a few differences. Certain motions require 6 votes to pass, including releasing of audits and approval of RPLs. Alternate members are always welcome, encouraged to sit at the table in meetings and be involved in discussion, but will only be called upon to vote when they are needed to achieve quorum. A member who has filed to run for an office other than the state legislative office cannot continue to serve on the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee. Brief at ease. That Representative Delana Johnson arrived here at about 5:04. Thank you. At this time, we'll be hearing from Legislative Audit and Legislative Finance to understand how these divisions interact with the committee. I'd like to invite Chris Curtis, Legislative Auditor, to the table. Please identify yourself for the record and begin your presentation.
Good evening. For the record, my name is Chris Curtis. I'm your state legislative auditor. I'm also responsible for the Division of Legislative Audit. I've been in this position for 11 years, but with the division for almost 30 years. Today, I have with me a few members of my administrative staff. I have Gavin Berkey, who is the publication specialist. wave a little. There you go. He's responsible for editing the reports and other publications like the handbook you have in front of you. I have Martha Nerino Torres. She's in charge of the administrative section. And I have the newest member of the team, Tony Marie Gonzalez, who is our new administrative assistant. So these are the admin folks you'll be working with this year or next 2 years. We are responsible for updating your committee handbook, which you have in front of you. The handbook is also available on your LBNA committee website. The handbook includes authorizing statutes for this committee as well as your two permanent staff agencies, the Division of Legislative Audit and the Division of Legislative Finance. In addition, the handbook includes the committee's formal policies and procedures. The formal policies and procedures basically guide the committee in how it conducts its business. And those start on page 39, and they're worth a quick look-see to kind of understand what's there. I'm not going to go through them, but I encourage you to look at them in your off time. Now, it's interesting, this committee's been around since the mid-1950s, and some of these procedures date back to the 1950s. So if we know the date it was created, we've put a date next to the next to it. In general terms, they guide the conduct of business. Some of the most significant parts are the approval of audits, the approval of audit requests, and general administrative functions such as contracting and the payment of travel. I'd like to take a few minutes to go through the confidential report distribution procedures, which you find on page 47 of your handbook. So statutes make the audit process confidential, and it's important that you and your staff take the necessary procedures to prevent the premature release of this information until the LBNA committee has had the opportunity to review it and approve it for release. Audit reports that have not been approved by the committee for release should not be copied or distributed for any purpose. Reports are released through a two-step process. First, a report is brought before this committee as a preliminary audit report. Members do not see preliminary audits until you arrive at the meeting. I will give the preliminary audit to you when you arrive. I go through the preliminary report conclusions and recommendations in executive session. And when the committee comes out of executive session, usually a motion is made to release the preliminary audits to the auditee asking for their formal response. So at this point, the audit is still confidential, and then I work with the audit agencies to obtain their formal response, and that formal response and that communication is confidential. I receive the formal response, I attach it to the preliminary report, and then bring the report back to the committee as a final audit. Again, it's presented in executive session, and then the committee comes out of executive session and will make a motion to release it as a final public document, and it is confidential until it's released as a final public document.
Thank you. If I can interrupt for just a second, I'd like to recognize that Senator Kaufman joined us about 5:07. And I'd also like to recognize that Representative Kronk is in the audience with us. Thank you.
Reports that are to be presented as final are sent to the committee members ahead of the meeting. If we're in session, the reports are required to be sent to you at least 2 days in advance of the meeting. The reports will be delivered to you in sealed envelopes, and they'll be stamped confidential. You or a member of your staff will be asked to sign for the reports. The final reports will be printed on blue paper, and that's to help you distinguish the confidential audit report from other non-confidential information you may have on your desk. Outside of session, the final reports will be delivered to you at least 4 days in advance of a meeting. Please keep physical control over the final reports to maintain their confidentiality. Are there any questions about the confidential audit process? Okay, I'd like to just take a brief second to go over the workload of the division. You should have a handout that summarizes our current audit workload. We have six performance audits, 5 sunset audits, and 1 statewide financial audit. The Office of Children's Services compliance with foster care reform is the oldest audit request. At the direction of the committee, this audit was put on hold until after the pandemic. We expect to start that audit in the springtime. Spending on Janus contracts, that audit work has been done, and we're just needing to find the resources to draft the report. So I expect to bring that in front of the committee as a preliminary audit before the end of session. Oil and gas production tax audit process, we expect to start that spring or summer. And then an audit of the Technical Vocational Education Program, also referred to as TVEP. That audit we expect to get done and presented to the committee as a final document or to the public before session starts in January. That program is up for sunset next year. So there will be a bill most likely to extend the program next year. And the idea with this audit request was that an audit would be available to policymakers to consider during that process. And then the Alaska State Information Technology System, that's a security audit. That audit request directs me to procure the services of IT security experts to help review the state security systems. So we do expect to start that up in this summer or spring. I don't expect to start workers' comp until at least a year or two out. The four sunsets, those are required to be done by statute and released as documents before the next session starts next January, because that's the way the sunset law works. It's not uncommon for the LBNA committee to have a meeting the day before session starts. So just kind of be aware of that. And then there's a follow-up required as the bill to extend the Board of Chiropractic Examiners included uncodified law that directed legislative audit to provide a status of the recommendations to the committee before June 30th of 2023. So that will be in a memo format, not an official report. It doesn't require a meeting to release. And then the financial audit, that is the ACFR audit, the Annual Comprehensive Financial Report. That opinion is required by statute to be available by December 15th. And it's January, whatever, 24th. So we were provided the draft statements to audit on December 19th. So that's a month and a half late. So we're hoping to get that opinion out in mid-January, which is about what it's been the last few years. Unfortunately, there are some outside audits that have to be included into the ACFR that have not been received. So that opinion might be delayed. If it's going to be significantly delayed, what I can do for the first time ever is just provide policymakers an audited schedule of, like, say, the general fund, so you know your balance of the CDR, which I think is the most interesting aspect of that report for policymakers. So you know, as of June 30th, 2022, what the balance, audited balance of the CDR is. And so that's the current status of the workload. Is there any questions about workload?
I do have a question regarding that, the ACFR. Is it possible for you to provide us with the content that you do have and then supplement it with the audit portions, or is it relying upon that which is missing in order for you to reach a conclusion?
It's, Chair, it's reliant. So the audit opinion actually gives multiple opinions, and that one of the missing pieces is a significant part of the ACFR, okay. International airports. So.
Thank you. Any other questions? Please continue.
That's the end of the presentation. If there's no questions, I'll turn it over to Alexi Painter, your legislative fiscal analyst.
Thank you, Ms. Curtis. Yep. I'd like now to invite Alexi Painter, our legislative fiscal analyst, to come up and give us an overview of Ledge Finance, which most of us are probably aware of it. But anyway, please identify yourself and for the record and begin your presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Alexi Painter. I'm the legislative fiscal analyst and the director of the Legislative Finance Division. I've been with the division, I think this is my ninth session, and my third as the director. Our division includes the Legislative Finance Division proper that I think you're familiar with. We have currently six analysts, as well as an administrative staff and programmers. It also, my division includes the finance secretaries in both the House and the Senate who run these committee rooms. I think that's probably less known in the legislature. And while we do work for this committee and with this committee, our primary duty in statute is to support the finance committees in the budget process. Most of our interaction with the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee historically has been through the RPL process, or Revised Programs Legislative. So you may be familiar with this process. These are requests by the executive branch to expend money that was not anticipated in preparing the budget. The typical process is that when there is a planned LBNA meeting, The Office of Management and Budget will submit RPLs, if they have any, to the committee. The Legislative Finance Division will receive those and analyze them, and we typically try to give you that analysis a week before the meeting, although sometimes we don't get the RPLs until too late to meet that deadline. Usually when there's technical issues with the RPLs, OMB will modify them or withdraw them. Occasionally they do go farther than that. Just last month there were two that went to a vote and were not recommended by the committee. Even if the committee votes no against an RPL, that doesn't mean that it doesn't go into effect. It means that the committee has given its advice not to proceed. The governor then may either withdraw the RPL or implement it after 45 days have elapsed. So the RPL process is fundamentally advisory. It would not be constitutional for the committee to have the power of appropriation. So it's providing an advice role on these items. The statute governing my division also states that the Legislative Finance Division will complete studies and prepare reports, memoranda, and other materials as directed by the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee. We can also therefore do special projects at the direction of the committee. That has been infrequently used, but we are happy to work on those as directed. Happy to answer any questions about what we do.
Representative Josephson.
Through the chair, Mr. Painter, the rejected RPLs from mid-December, is that clock operative, the 45-day clock, even though we're in session?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, yes. So the 45-day clock began the day that the RPL was submitted to the legislature, and I'm not sure where we are in that clock, whether I believe it was the end of January that would run out, so should be very soon.
Follow up?
Well, you mentioned that LBNA is advisory. The question of who is the appropriator, in some respects, is sort of unresolved in these contexts. Is that fair? That the law is a little bit muddled?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, so the law provides that the legislature may appropriate money, that money may be appropriated conditioned on going through the LBNA process. That is an appropriation, so the power of appropriation remains with the full body that appropriates these additional amounts contingent on the process. That statutory process does not give the committee the authority to stop RPLs because, again, we can't delegate that power to a committee. So I'm not sure that there's an ambiguity in that statute because it has to be an appropriation of those funds. It's just an appropriation that are additional funds contingent on the review process of the in statute.
Okay. Just to follow up, I guess where I'm going with this is there are a couple ways that this has been contentious, but ultimately, the governor effectively can appropriate money during an interim using the RPL process. Is that fair?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, the governor may increase appropriation items that already exist based on the appropriation language that we put in the bill allowing him to do so. So he's not making new appropriations. He is increasing existing appropriations in accordance with the appropriation in the bill allowing him to do that. If we did not appropriate that section in the budget, he couldn't do that. It's subject to appropriation.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Josephson. Appreciate it. Any other questions? Senator Stedman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Maybe you can help the committee by explaining a little bit of the federal money when RPLs come in as an increase or of some funds that weren't expected in the amount. That might help clarify things a little bit.
Through the chair, Senator Stedman. Yes, so an RPL in the statute is appropriate where there is an increase in revenue, federal revenue or other not general funds, that it was unanticipated during session. It specifically says that you cannot utilize an existing fund balance for that, and the appropriation language has also made that clear in recent years. So it has to be unexpected revenue that was not anticipated during the budget process. The committee, the legislature can also place additional restrictions on the RPL process through that appropriation language, as they have the last few years, that further restrict the funds that are allowed to be used. The statute and the typical appropriation language both also provide restrictions, not allowing general fund program receipts and others to be used in this process. Only federal funds and certain other funds, again, contingent on there being additional revenue beyond expectations.
Senator Wolakowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Has the Supreme Court ever ruled on the legality of this of the RPL process? That's always been just questionable to me, the whole process.
Through the chair, Senator Wolakowski, I believe the courts have not ruled on that part. There have been the Superior Court has ruled on the Medicaid expansion RPLs, but I don't believe that one went to the Supreme Court.
Any other questions? Okay, thank you, Mr. Painter. I appreciate it. Is there any other business to come before the committee today? Okay, hearing none, then we are adjourned as of 5:22 p.m.